Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 18th, 2016. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Mary Pelletieri, author of Quality Management, Essential Planning for Breweries, joins us to give us tips on getting a handle on our quality management processes. How can the quality management practices of big and small breweries apply to us at home? If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing Bottle Opener. And don't forget, get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook while you're at it. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. Talk about your quality management strategy. Starts right there, I think. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on our Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first and click on our associate link. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show. We greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows phone app. We're on the BlackBerry Podcast Directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar or pit a tip in our whatever you want to do, if you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. And thanks to everybody who's done so already. And if you contribute via the support link, I'll send you an email with links to this year's bonus video showing Steve making Kansas City burnt ends out of chuck roast and cooking it up on his personal barbecue or with his personal barbecue sauce recipe to go along with it, along with the previous 2 years' bonus videos as well. As you might be able to tell by my cold medicine-induced fog and my raspy voice, I'm getting over a cold, so I want to keep my comments short. But in looking at the mailbag, we're still getting advice for Matt in San Antonio on his big holiday beer that didn't carbonate in the bottle. Sean from Austin, which is not too far away from San Antonio, says, I haven't used champagne yeast, but I know that Danstar has a yeast strain called CBC1 that is made for bottle conditioning and bred to ferment simple sugars, i.e. priming sugar, without fermenting residual malt sugars like dextrins, maltotriose, etc. I've used it with great success in barley wines, wheat wines, and quads with up to 12.5% ABV. It carbs up nicely in 2 to 3 weeks and leaves a dense sediment that is easy to keep in the bottle at serving time. And it seems to do a great job of using up residual oxygen, because barley wine I bottled with it 2 years ago is still getting better with age. I've always added it in the bottling bucket, and a little goes a long way. About a third of a pack is enough to carb up a 5-gallon batch. Since Matt has already bottled, maybe the old advice of sanitized tweezers and 2 to 3 grains of yeast in each bottle would do the trick. I wish I had a better idea of how to add it now that the beer is bottled, but I can definitely say that CBC1 is the right yeast for the job, and he should try it for his next big beer. Thanks, Sean. I believe that we did mention that yeast in a previous answer, but I like the additional details, the additional info that Sean gives on that. This upcoming Monday, I'm going to post another cocktail episode of Basic Brewing Video. This is the second show that we recorded on the day that we made vermouth out of Steve's homemade wine. In next week's show, Steve takes my molasses mead. You might remember that it came out a bit sweet for my taste. And Steve uses it to make a Manhattan, or as I called it, a mead-hattan. We had a lot of fun with that one. Maybe too much fun, looking at the video. Be sure to check that feed, and wherever you find our video podcasts, check that on Monday. I was looking at the website of our sponsors, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa, highgravitybrew.com, and I saw a new ingredient kit that I hadn't seen before that I find very appealing right now, Sinister Coffee Stout. This beer ingredient kit is inspired by Left Hand Milk Stout, It's like an espresso with cream, the website says. This very dark, sweet, full-bodied, slightly roasty ale is perfect for cold winter nights or frosty winter mornings. The addition of double shots, cold-pressed, concentrated coffee in economically friendly collapsible bags adds a perfectly balanced coffee and cream flavor. Now, this kit appeals to me for two reasons. First of all, I am a sinister person. I'm left-handed. Look up sinister in the dictionary if you don't get the joke. And a coffee stout sounds like the perfect beer to come out of a cold with, you know, to kind of perk me up with the caffeine and the creaminess, soothe my throat a little bit. Now, if you go to the page for Sinister Coffee Stout Kit on highgravitybrew.com, you can find that you can customize the kit to your liking. Not only can you choose extract or all grain, and choose whether you'd like your grain crushed or not, you can now choose whether to add nth ingredients. What? You can take your beer to the nth degree with high gravity nth ingredients and create a unique flavor experience. Right there on the Sinister Coffee Stout page near the bottom, you can choose to add things like cacao nibs, hazelnut flour, Oklahoma honey, oak chips, and other fun stuff, including fruit purees. Now, I don't know how a peach puree would go with a coffee stout, but that's not my business if you want to try it. It's all out there for your option. Check it out for yourself at highgravitybrew.com. Take your beer to the nth degree with high gravity nth ingredients. And as usual, you can get flat rate shipping of $7.99 for ingredients and many other products at highgravitybrew.com. Okay, let's get away from my scratchy voice and talk to Mary Pelletieri about her book, Quality Management, Essential Planning for Breweries. Mary Pelletieri, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hi, good morning, James. Thanks for having me.
You've written the book called Quality Management, Essential Planning for Breweries. And we like to say we're all about home brewing here on Basic Brewing Radio, but we do have professional brewers who listen to the show, and quality management. Home brewers can benefit from quality management practices as well, because quality is everything, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think most brewers are naturally dedicated to quality because they're trying out new things and new flavors, and that's really why they get into it, because they want to make a quality beer. When I started in my brewing career, I actually was a home brewer, so I remember the desire to have better yeast and the desire to, you know, go all grain and have more control. And I think it's just ingrained in the practice of the hobby to want to have better quality.
Talk about your background. How did you come to know enough to write a book on quality management?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I started home brewing, and I went from there to the Siebel Institute, which was at the time testing beer from all over the world, and had a lab, and I worked in their lab part-time and was going to graduate school. And I was going to graduate school for environmental and health science, and I thought that's where my career would lead me, but Siebel basically offered me a job when I was finished, and I took it. So I just stayed in the lab there and eventually worked my way into the sensory lab and ran that for a while, and then worked my way into teaching at Siebel for both the lab course and the sensory course. And that was a good start, because I would have brewers come in there, you know, from all over the world, and they were all growing at the time. This was back in the mid-90s, so some of those breweries obviously shut down, but many stayed in business, and many of those brewers are now, you know, the head of the breweries that they were with, and they were just getting training back then. But Goose Island was one of the breweries that always came to visit, and I left Siebel for a few years and went and learned a little bit more about the quality trade at a food testing facility, and I basically taught sanitation and FDA stuff for a while, and then I came back to the brewing world when Goose Island called me, and I stayed there for 8.5 years, building their quality program, changing up the testing program all the time, and then eventually went to MillerCoors and worked at a very large facility, the MillerCoors Milwaukee Brewery, for 5 years as a quality manager there as well.
And quality nowadays, especially when there are so many beers out there, and people are trying different beers, trying different breweries, and they may only try your beer once, and if it's not any good, they may not ever come back. So quality nowadays, especially with the crowded marketplace, is even more important, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the craft beer, especially the Brewers Association, recognize this, that craft beer as a brand really needs to focus on safety and quality to make sure that those breweries are putting out the best beer possible, because people go to craft beer because they associate that with quality. So if the beer isn't as good as you want it, and you should be trained to know what good tastes like, then you shouldn't be in business, really. Although every brewer I know has had to dump a batch, so it's part of being in business, is those quality issues come up. You got to know how to deal with them.
Yeah, Ken Grossman wrote the from Sierra Nevada wrote the foreword or the preface for your book, and he one of the things he said was don't be afraid to dump a batch of beer,
Right.
and that goes for home brewers as well. I mean, if you make a bad batch of beer and then you give it to your friends or try to enter it into a competition, you're not going to get good results.
Yeah, I mean, why bother, right? And some people are afraid of losing the money, but if it's not drinkable, you might lose more than just the money that you lost from that batch. So, yeah, I think it's just part of brewing. You can control as much as you can control, but sometimes there's variables and factors that are outside of your realm of control, and they may go haywire, you know. And I think even big brewers recognize this. And of course, the stakes are much higher for a big brewer that doesn't do the right thing at the right time. And I've been, again, in medium to big breweries, and we've all had to dump batches. It happens everywhere.
So how do we define quality when we're talking about beer? What are the components that you're looking at?
Well, I think quality in beer is kind of starting at the core, is very much a sensory thing. So is it balanced? Does it taste right for the style? Is the beer drinkable? So that drinkability factor is kind of the first thing. And then the second is it technically well made? Did the fermentation go as planned? Are there any off flavors that maybe technically shouldn't be there? So I think usually that's the core. What builds out of that is how you continually do that, how you continually make that ideal batch, and how you do that is usually a fairly large system of record keeping and data monitoring, and always learning, continuously learning, is usually how I describe a quality program. It starts with knowing what you want to achieve, and then how you do that, and how you record and monitor information along the way.
Now, a lot of it's just paying attention, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, making records of how a batch tastes, as simple as that, can be considered a quality record. And if you changed a variable that, say you changed a mash temperature, or you noticed a pH was a little different, how did that impact flavor? So it's always good to have some sort of output record, and then everything that went into the batch, all those inputs, anything you can record, record it. So time, temperatures, pHs, if you have a pH meter throughout the whole process, those are good, basic measurements. And of course, Plato. I think most home brewers are recording their Platos or their gravities because they want to know how much alcohol they're making. So I think those are very basic input measurements, and then you have to have some sort of record of how it tasted, how the output was.
And you might want to think about when you buy batches of ingredients, say bags of specialty malts or something like that, you might want to tag those to remind yourself when you bought them. I, for instance, had some friends over the other day teaching them how to brew, and I brought out this bag of black patent malt, and I said, "Here, taste this." And I, you know, tried to describe the taste that they were going to taste, and we tasted it, and the the bag was stale. And, you know, and the guy said, "Well, why did you make me taste this?" And I said, "Well, I
I didn't." That was a good experience, actually.
Yeah, exactly. I was just testing your palate. No, but but you know, typically I don't taste my ingredients before you know, I put them in the batch. And if I had made a batch of beer with that specialty malt, it would have been bad. So yeah. keeping track of your ingredients before they go in the mash tun or the brew pot is key as well.
Yeah, you know, even big brewers taste every malt load they receive. They usually take a large spear. They go up on top of the truck. And they'll spear the inside of the truck, or and basically takes a large sample of malt, and they're able to look at it. So they look at the malt, they taste the malt, and make sure that it is what they ordered effectively, and that there was no off flavors in the transport or within the shipment of it. Because even you know, even bagged malt can taste moldy or have some moisture impact it. So I think it's just a standard thing to taste. Taste your ingredients, smell your hops, and if you have pitchable yeast in a liquid form, you can taste it, you know, just to make sure it tastes fresh, tastes like kind of fresh bread yeast, an older yeast strain, or if it tastes sour, you know, there's something not right with that yeast. Sensory is easily the best quality tool you have, and it can be, it can save you, you know, it can prevent you from using that bad malt or that bad yeast if you're doing it consistently.
Now you spend a lot of time in the book talking about setting up a quality management program, and obviously for bigger brewers that looks different from small craft brewer or a home brewer. But are there things in common from small breweries or home breweries to large breweries as far as setting up a kind of quality management program?
Sure. I mean, every brewery's got to keep a record. Every home brewer is going to keep a batch record. That's the most basic. And, you know, if you think about the big breweries, their batch records are going to be electronic. But they're still keeping batch records. I tell the story that one big brewery I know, and I won't mention the name, actually, their entire quality system was based off of a paper system. And they built this DOS program based off a paper system, which literally the batch followed throughout the system. It was a good way to keep record of what batch went where. But it's kind of interesting because they would use these terminology and it came from this old paper system. So, you know, keeping paper systems is not for naught. It's something that how every brewery starts. Even the bigger regionals today started with paper system, and some even keep maintaining that because you have to record every little bit of detail you can. Usually, breweries are, as I like to say, metric rich, and you have too much data to even think about how you're going to dive into it if something went wrong. But most breweries are keen on keeping records for. At the very, very start, and a lot of data. So that's the similarity between everyone.
So what should we be keeping track of? What are the key components that we should be looking at?
Well, I think within that batch record, obviously, if you have recorded your malt and your hops and your yeast lots, and when you receive them, like you said, that's a good kind of starting point. If you did any sensory on them, how they tasted, and then you go into your process records and everything from times and temperatures and pHs throughout the whole process, pH of your water, pH of your mash, pH of your wort before knockout, that sort of thing. Those are good records to keep. Any visual records of how the hop break happened, when it happened, those are also good. It's just good information in case something doesn't go right. And then yields, usually brewers are very keen on getting the right amount of work through the system and right amount of beer out of the system. It's not so critical for a home brewer, but, you know, if you if you have a good hop break, you're probably not going to get as much yield out of your kettle, which is actually, maybe that's a good thing. You know, maybe that actually improved the flavor because you got a really good boil. So those things are all really good information to keep during fermentation. You keep records of how it's fermented, how it smelled. Did you get a gravity at the start of fermentation when it was really starting to rock and roll? Did you get a, if you have a microscope, you could count your yeast. You know, there's, like I said, there's just data and data and data throughout the whole process. But the most simple things are gravities and pH, and then any sensory data you can gather, including visuals, throughout the process.
That reminds me, I spent 12 years in corporate communications for a major meat company, and part of that was training materials for quality and safety, and the terms total quality management and HACCP or hazard analysis critical control point, those pop up in the book. And can you talk about those? What those terms mean and what they might mean for a small brewer or a home brewer?
Well, the Brewers Association asked me to write a book about quality, and in my career, since I had kind of a varied career, I went from brewing back into the food industry and then back into brewing. I had a different lens on when I went back into brewing, which was, you know, food companies have a very different approach to quality, not completely, you know, out of whack of what breweries were doing, but much more food safety and just much more of a food safety approach. The total quality management movement, which kind of impacted not only manufacturing, but it went into kind of business processes. I wanted to introduce brewers to these terms and these concepts. HACCP is another one that was very heavy, obviously used in meat and meat and eggs and dairy. And even juice, but we're, as brewers, weren't necessarily required to do a HACCP program. And I wanted to really introduce these terms, HACCP being a food safety program that large companies put in place very early on, at least in food, to help control hazards that they might have been missing in their quality system. So I think it was just important to tee up the world of quality to brewers, because there's many people that are new to brewing. They might get into brewing because they were home brewers, and they don't necessarily come out of a manufacturing field or an engineering field. And those fields are ripe with just this body of knowledge of quality. And it was time to kind of put all that together for professional brewers, because some of them knew it and some of them didn't. So it was just a good starting point to get a reference document, reference out there that really summarized the world of quality for them.
When you talk about critical control points, these are essentially points in the process where things can go wacky, right? And points where you can monitor the product as it's going through the process to sort of make sure that it's on the right track and make sure that it's not going bad at that particular point, right?
You know, in a quality system, there's things that you monitor that are process related, so your times and temperatures and yields, and then there's things that you monitor that you might actually pull the beer out of the system and measure it, some Plato, gravity, or pH. Those are points in time in which you can correct something. So critical control point is a little different. You might call all of those other things I just mentioned control points. A critical control point is considered a food safety control point, where and it may not even be measuring the beer itself. It might be measuring something surrounding the beer. For example, in packaging, where when we were packaging beer, we would actually have to measure the flow of the water that was going through the bottle rinser. Because if it got too low, the potential of a hazard, such as a physical hazard or some broken glass or something in a bottle, could get rinsed out. So that was considered a critical control point, in which we had to have special record keeping. breweries in general have to really watch their physical hazards, and then any chemical hazards, so that you're rinsing your chemicals properly off your tanks or any surface that touches the beer. Those are considered critical because if you don't do those right, you could potentially harm.
I guess quality control point might be a good way to look at most of these things that we need to be looking at.
Yeah, they call them QCPs or CPs, control points or quality control points.
I get email, not as much as I used to, but I get e email from new brewers saying, "My beer keeps turning out bad. What am I doing wrong?" and man, there are so many places where people could be doing things in the
Right.
wrong way. And so you can't, and what I usually do is fire back, well, here are some things that you might want to be looking at, but we do an annual disaster show, at the end of every year here on Basic Brewing Radio. And this past year we had a story of these guys, this group of guys who were getting together to make beers together, and they had like three batches turn out sour. And so they finally decided, okay, we're going to look at the process and check everything in every, at every stage. And so they, during they tasted the wort, they tasted the beer coming out of the primary fermenter into the secondary fermenter, into the bottling bucket. Tasted great. They bottled the beer. Turned out sour.
Well, that's a great, at least they traced back to where the root cause was.
But it turned out that they had a they bought a 2 pound bag not of priming sugar but of citric acid. So
Wow.
so they had wonderful beer all the way, all the way into the bottling bucket where they primed it with citric acid. So they were getting this sour flat beer every time, and they didn't know why. So there you
Oh
go.
my
There's a
goodness.
quality point. Checking every single little thing along the line. It could be a rewarding process.
Well, certainly, and that, yeah, and that, you know, that's one of those corrections that you can make pretty easily. Make sure you look at whatever you're putting into your beer, you record the lot number and what it is. Because you could do a silly thing. When people are trying to troubleshoot, you first you have to identify what's bad. What is bad about this? Is it under fermented? Is it sour? Is it, potentially microbial problems? Is it just a problem with DMS or diacetyl, these off flavors that can have many roots. And I think if you're able to do that, and breweries many times, and this is where I caution brewers, no matter the size, say you have diacetyl, well, oh, we crashed the tank too fast. Well, that may or may not be the reason why you had diacetyl. So that's a potential root, but there's, many routes. So no matter what the problem, if you think you know the answer, make sure you write down all the potential root causes and, like your friends did, trace back to what it actually is, because you don't know until you know. Many breweries can solve problems and then have to solve them again and again and again because they don't actually address the root cause. That's the fun part about quality, is doing the problem solving, but doing it right takes some time and patience and diligence, like your friends had to do.
And you mentioned sensory analysis. Getting other viewpoints or other people to taste your beer, whether you're a home brewer or a professional brewer, is essential as well. And getting input to determine whether the beer is good or not, and if it's not good, what's not good about it.
Right. Yeah. I think having a few points of view on that, if you don't know, you're saying this batch doesn't taste right, try to get a few additional measures. And if you can't actually, measure pHs, like I said, or anything else, micro, or you can always use other people as a sensory tool and see what they say. Sometimes it's just not very easy to troubleshoot with sensory alone. You might need extra measurement. And I think there's now some more reasonably priced quality measures that you can get for home brewers. Like maybe your BUs are just wrong, or maybe maybe you use too much malt of one kind or the other. You know, there's records that you can look back on, but I think measure is what you can, and if it's just sensory, make sure you get a good variety of people that have good palates to help you figure out what might have gone wrong, and then do due diligence to get to the root cause of it.
So talk about, beyond sensory analysis, talk about the tests that are available for brewers, and kind of go from the low end to the high end. I mean, what's accessible as far as testing is concerned for home brewers and small craft brewers, and what do the big guys use?
Well, everyone uses a measure of gravity, sugar, one way or another. I think the caution for home brewers is to learn how to use hydrometers properly, or if you're using a refractometer, understand how to use that properly as well. I always like to take multiple measurements at phases where if the precision or the accuracy of the equipment isn't all that great, or the person measuring it isn't all that great, take a few measurements. It doesn't hurt, and take an average. So I think there's some real basic blocking and tackling that everyone has to do, and that's measuring sugar throughout the process as well as pH. pH is another tool that's used that many times can go wonky on you, and a few tenths of a pH difference is a big deal. So you have to make sure that your pH meter, if you're using a meter, is calibrated and functioning properly. And don't assume, you know, test it before you use it. Those are just some basics that everyone uses. I think beyond that, if you have a microscope, you try to look at your yeast and count your yeast and use that microscope as much as you can to look at the beer. You might look at beer sediments in your bottle. Just to see what's there. Microscope's a very simple tool and not that expensive. You know, I encourage home brewers to, if they can, find a used microscope or even just go online and get some you know, student microscope. They really aren't that expensive, and you can kind of share it with other people. And it's a fun tool to use. So kind of makes you look at the smallest little elements of your brewing and your beer. It's kind of exciting. I think so. Beyond sensory, those tools are used universally. Once you get into a brewery, you start to use more equipment, such as a spectrophotometer to help you measure color and bitterness and some other basic components to beer. You can do all sorts of things with a spectrophotometer in terms of wet chemistry. And then some brewers go on and get, you know, fancy tools to measure alcohol, fancy tools to measure dissolved oxygen, expensive things. They might have a real fancy tool called a gas chromatograph that measures many things sensory, but it gives it an accurate representation of your vicinal diketones, your VDKs, so your diacetyl and acetoin and anything that's precursor to VDK. So it's actually, you know, it can get very technical, as you can well imagine. And the cost continues to go up. So, but everyone, you know, and it's funny because going from the smallest to the largest of breweries, everyone suffers from a lot of the same stuff. Protein and protein issues and colloidal issues. So the beer gets hazy in the bottle, or the beer gets hazy when it's chilled. Those are common problems I see everywhere. Micro and spoilage are common problems I see everywhere. And yeast handling, just not pitching enough yeast or pitching over pitching, common problems you see everywhere. And it's once you have those basic tools, even the most basic tools can give you a lot of information in brewing. So start with Plato and pH and your sensory, and you're on your way.
And you got to make sure that your tools are calibrated as well.
That's correct. Yes. Good point. You know, I did kind of mention that regarding using the hydrometer properly and using a pH meter properly, making sure it's working, functioning, reading correct. That includes sensory, though. You know, a lot of people don't think of calibrating their palate, but you should calibrate. A great way to do that is learn to become a judge, which helps you learn from other judges, or taste as many different styles of beers with people that are a little more tuned to it or have been professionally trained. They can help you start to pick out these different nuances of beer flavor. And the other thing you can do is just get those kits, there are sensory kits that are out there. You can share cost on that with other people and train yourself on off flavors. Dial in your sense to the off flavors. Once you do that, you really are really have a lot of tools at your to use. Very basic, but they work.
Is there a piece of advice or a small set of pieces of advice that you most often give to brewers, or is there a problem that is the most common that you come across as far as quality management standpoint?
I think cleaning and sanitation is not very well understood in a lot of breweries, and I don't know why that is. I think my sense is, I came out of food and I learned how to clean and sanitize from the people that sold the chemicals. A lot of brewers come out of brewing schools and they kind of learn one way, and it might be an old way, because brewing schools, they come out of very old tradition, German traditions of brewing, that sort of thing. So I'm always kind of surprised at how little is known about cleaning and sanitizing, and really the new technologies in cleaning and sanitizing, and how easy it is to screw up. The most basic thing that a brewer can do is measure the amount of caustic that they're using, measure the amount of sanitizer they're using, actually in the fluid that's sanitizing, to make sure that it's the right quantity. And sanitizers are meant to be non-rinse, so if you have the right quantity, you don't need to rinse it. And a lot of breweries still rinse their sanitizer off, and I always wonder, why did you just do that?
Exactly.
It's kind of like, it's not akin, it's kind of like adding a lime to a beer, If you really brewed the beer all you wanted to taste, why do you have to add a lime to it? But not quite. But
Careful,
you get my
careful, Mary.
sense. There's no reason to rinse sanitizer off if you did the sanitation properly. But people are afraid of flavors from sanitizers, and they think rinsing it might be better, but they're potentially introducing more microbes. So there's just a lot of misunderstanding in sanitation, and those are usually the most prevalent of problems that you find in breweries. Something doesn't get sanitized properly.
We did shows with manufacturers of Iodofor and Starsan years ago, and those are some of the most popular shows in the archives. People in, I still get comments from people saying, God, I didn't know, because people think if a little bit of Starsan in this sanit in my carboy to sanitize it, a little more will be great. And
Right, a little more is better,
I use
no?
about three glugs, out of the bottle.
Dipsticks are really something that's a very easy investment. You can get dipsticks for sanitizers online now. Amazon obviously has all this stuff, but even at restaurant supply shops, restaurants have to make sure that the sanitizing water that they're using is not too high. It's not too high in sanitizer, so. If you're using a chlorine sanitizer, there's dipsticks out there to help you measure it properly. I'm sure there are for iodine. I know we do a titration using peracetic acid. So there's all sorts of things you can use, but it is one of those critical things that it could be considered as a CCP. If you have too much sanitizer, you could be actually harming yourself by drinking that beer. Because some sanitizers, obviously, you don't want to
All right,
drink.
right. If it has a warning sticker on the container, might not want it in want too much in your beverage.
Well, actually, it's illegal. This is another thing people don't understand. It's actually illegal to use the chemical in a different way than what the manufacturer writes on the label. And so if you're in a professional brewing capacity and you're just kind of shooting from the hip and doing what you think is right, there's a legality to that. Unfortunately, a lot of breweries don't get inspected by who I see as can be your helpful friends is your health department. Breweries that don't, they're just kind of under the radar because they're making alcohol, but these little things are something that, a health department is going to help you realize. They're not going to necessarily ding you. Their health department many times is there to help you keep the public health safe and help you understand the law. And I think they can be a real good resource for breweries to learn from. A lot of breweries just are afraid to bring them in because they think they're going to, be punitive, but not every health department is.
There's the old cliche, we're from the government, we're here to help.
In quality, you've got to kind of keep an open mind and assume that's true.
Now for home brewers and small craft brewers, we can farm out some of this stuff as far as the testing and the lab services and such, can't we?
There are testing services out there now, and they're not that expensive. Like I think that landscape's changing faster than I've been able to keep up. I know certainly there's more smaller yeast producers out there that are really kind of stretching the bounds of yeast that they're propping up. They're getting kind of in, that's I think that's becoming a very interesting place to for home brewers. But yeah, certainly testing is something that's out there. You just have to look online. I know Siebel Institute does some testing. There's Gary Spedding does testing for people, and it's not that expensive. Forgive me because I don't know if there's any smaller home brewer testers at, test kits out there, but I'm sure there are testing services for home beers now that is not expensive. It's good to do. It's good to do on occasion just to kind of check, for example, your BUs. Are you actually getting the bitterness units that you think you are calculated value-wise out of a batch? That's a good check to do. So I always recommend testing if you can afford it.
And the landscape is changing a lot with people intentionally souring beers and introducing other organisms on purpose other than yeast into the beer. And our friend Jack McAuliffe, who started New Albion Brewery, lives here in Northwest Arkansas, and he's not a fan of sour beers because he used to pour those down the drain. So. So the quality landscape is changing.
It is, and that's actually, something I mentioned in my book. It introduces a lot of risk. So, he's right in a sense that those beers, if not handled properly, that can be a problem. Because now you've introduced this microflora into your brewery that you may not want in your pale ale. And I don't think you can always pull the wool over people's eyes anymore and say, oh, this is a brand new style of beer I made. It's a sour pale
Accidentally.
ale or whatever. I don't think that's something that you can do anymore. I think that used to be the case, but not the case anymore.
I was judging a homebrew competition. They put me in the Belgian category, and that was an adventure because a lot of homebrewers, if something goes sour unintentionally, they submit it as a Belgian. And I used the descriptors animal shelter on one of my score sheets.
That's not good.
Because there's the fecal stuff and then there's the solventy stuff. It's just brought me back to the animal shelter when I was a kid. So how do we wrap this up? How do we put all these elements together into a cohesive, effective quality management program?
I always say don't eat the elephant. Just take it slowly. Add what tests you can, what inputs you can, measure what you can, when you can, and keep records of it. And as you become more astute in your record keeping, you can start actually using those records to improve, tweak, modify, change something up, in which you're now improving a beer and trying to find that golden batch, And once you find that golden batch, you keep records of it so you know you're consistently making it. I think that's really the essence of quality is start slow and start small and just keep adding to your body of knowledge as you go.
There you go. Well, this has been fun. Mary, I
Yeah.
appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks for mentioning the book, and I hope I encourage folks not to shy away from quality. It's something everyone can do.
There you go. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you. Take care.
Well, thanks again to Mary. Quality management is essential if you want to brew good beer. And if you're a good, consistent brewer, you may already have a quality management program in place without even knowing it. For those looking to go pro, Mary's Quality Management Essential Planning for Breweries is probably a good place to start to get ideas on how to institute your own formal program. Don't forget to send me your favorite moments from Basic Brewing Radio over the years. I'm putting together a compilation show for like next month for when we are going to New Zealand, which is less than a month away now. Boy, that's exciting and scary at the same time. Until then, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcast. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can check out our logbooks too, where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Get a handle on your own quality management strategy by using our logbook as a good starting place. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Jerry Thomas's Bartender's Guide, How to Mix Drinks, 1862 reprint, a Bon Vivant's companion. I might have read that one before. Sounds familiar, but I still think it's cool. And set of four Metal Earth 3D laser cut models, Hubble Telescope, Apollo Lunar Rover, Apollo Lunar Module, and Mars Rover. Those look really cool. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on our Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson down in Austin, Texas. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.